Never start with the head. The victim gets all fuzzy.
Here's Johnny.
I see Danny.
Houston, we have a problem.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 95 for the 31st of July, 2010. Why won't my camera switch over? There we go. All right, I'm David McVeigh, your host, and I'm joined by my ever-faithful co-host, Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Hey, I'm better now. I've had coffee.
So, coffee is always good.
So there you go. I started one show, at least, without I'm tired. So
there you go. At least winter. One today we get without I'm tired.
Yeah. It's so weird having the headphones on. I don't know.
For some reason, you put them on for this show. You did this last week, too.
Well, because you said we might have a ray of trailers.
Oh, yeah, we have. Actually, for the next 2 hours, for this show and for the Geek Actually After Show, we got a whole host of video coming up. So stick with us, because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about in a very short period of time. And first of all, let's get this out of the way. What is this show? This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. And this week, along with that, remember we said we were introducing new sections. Not every new section will appear every week. So we don't have a movie tidbits section this week, but we do have our lists of five. Mm-hmm. We have some entertainment buzz or news, as we used to call it. And we have two film reviews for you this week. We're going to do a feature film, which is Roman Polanski's new film. I guess considering that we bagged out Mr. Polanski so much over the last few months, maybe we should actually review a film of his rather than just talk about his personal life.
Fine, if you must.
And then in keeping with the political feel, I thought we would go and do a little bit of a retro. It's not really retro because it's only a year old, but we're going to review the Blu-ray of In the Loop, the British political comedy, which we have varying opinions on. So it'll be very interesting to come to that. And as always, we will start the show with our feature film review. So we'll go straight into The Ghost Rider. Now, not Ghost Rider.
We have to be very clear on that, because it's actually really, really difficult.
Not the Nicolas Cage film. This is The Ghost.
No, the review for that's much shorter. It sucked.
All right, so this is The Ghost Writer, directed by Roman Polanski and written by Robert Harris and Roman Polanski. It stars Ewan McGregor, Pierce Brosnan, Olivia Williams, John Bernthal, Kim Cattrall, and we have to note, because there's a whole bunch of small roles that are fleshed out by relatively big names. So if you watch this film, keep an eye out for James Belushi, Tom Wilkinson, Timothy Hutton, and Eli Wallach. And I got to say, Eli Wallach is looking really old, but I guess he is about 400 years old. So, but yeah, he's aged a lot. Plotline is complicated. Let's just say very simply that Ewan McGregor is a ghost writer who is hired to help a former British Prime Minister write his memoirs after the first ghost mysteriously commits suicide. When the politician finds himself embroiled in war crime scandal, the ghost writer finds, and I keep referring to him as the ghost writer because even though he has a name, if you look at the credits, he is just listed as the ghost all the way through it. So the ghost writer finds that he might be in a little deep as he soon starts to unravel a mystery that could put him into mortal danger. And as usual, we will play a trailer for this film so you can have a look at what we're talking about. So here is The Ghost Writer.
You realize I know nothing about politics.
You voted for him, didn't you?
Adam Lang, of course I did. Everyone voted for him.
He was paid $10 million for these memoirs, but
it's a ghostwriter he needs.
Plus the money's good. Kids won't starve.
Do I have any kids?
I do. This is a great opportunity for you.
Hello? Who are you?
I'm your ghost.
The manuscript is not to be removed from this room. It's not to be copied. That would be a security risk.
So, how do we go about this?
I interview you and turn your answers into prose.
You ready to start?
Absolutely.
Former British Prime Minister Adam Lang is back in the news tonight.
You must be wondering what you've let yourself in for.
You're working for murder!
The pressure must have gotten to the first ghostwriter.
You didn't tell me there was another writer.
He was drunk. He drowned. I wonder if we'll ever know whether it was accident or suicide.
It was the book that killed him.
What have you gotten me into?
The prosecutor is asking you to launch a formal investigation.
Investigating me for what?
You're working for a war criminal.
You don't have any proof.
You're his ghostwriter. You'll get us the proof.
The truth is in Lang's memoirs.
You do realize how serious this is getting, don't you?
I'm in trouble.
Hello?
I think my predecessor was murdered. In one decision Lang made in 10 years as Prime Minister, which wasn't in the interests of the USA.
You're practically one of us now.
I am.
You're the writer that makes you an accomplice.
Do you have something to tell me?
All right, let's start this by saying that I didn't hate the film. I actually thought it was a nice throwback, a political intrigue film. I don't think it was the best film. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say, Josh, that I was actually a little bit frustrated by the film because it's one of those films where you sit there and go, it could have been brilliant. And it just doesn't quite hit the mark. And that kind of frustrated me. What did you think?
Well, I'm very much of the same mindset that you are, man. It's like the thing that kind of really annoys you about the film is that it follows too closely that typical kind of style that it's trying to emulate in the film, which is that it's a very slow burning.
Well, it's very, yeah, they're really emulating a whole homage to film noir, the thrillers of the 1940s and 50s, and they, I mean, effectively, they do very much mimic style
and beautifully mimic. Like it's really well illustrated, and the story plays out the right way, and the music is very fitting to that kind of thing. And it's like if you weren't watching it and just listening to the dialogue, it's like even the way they've recorded the sound is that really kind of sort of that kind of an era sound. It's all about the dialogue, and it's like every other sort of sound isn't really important. And I mean, you felt like you were watching that the whole time, and I really enjoyed that aspect to it. But the burn was actually too much for me. It was just there. I am a fan of slow films, but you've got to keep me interested.
Yeah, and we actually talked about this after the show, and one of the thoughts that we had on this, or one of I'm not sure if you entirely agreed with me, but one of the thoughts I had on this was that it felt to me like the biggest issue with the film was pacing. And it felt to me that if we look at our history of film, we know that Roman Polanski was popped at the border of Switzerland while the film was in post-production. So he'd finished shooting it. It was in the editing suite. He went over to Switzerland to collect this award, got arrested, and they had to finish the film without him.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder how different the film would have been had he been there to help pace it.
What do you think he would have changed, though, is the question I have.
I don't know, and that's the issue, because pacing, funnily enough, is actually a Roman Polanski issue. If you look at all of his films are languid. They are they do take their time to tell the story. Chinatown, as good as Chinatown is still a slow film. It takes its time to, it's a slow boil, takes its time to get where it's going. The Tenant, a psychological horrific thriller, still takes its time to build to the conclusion. Let's not forget Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby is a slow boil all the way up until its amazing reveal ending, and everybody remembers the ending, but everybody forgets that that film is as slow as shit throughout the rest of the film, you know?
Yeah.
And I liked Rosemary's Baby, and I like a lot of Polanski films, but you have to be prepared to invest that time in the way he makes films.
Well, that was I think the problem that I had with the film was that it didn't feel like it kind of had that Polanski-esque kind of a really solid finish. It didn't hit as hard as any of his other films. I just felt like at the end of it tied the story up nicely. And let's make sure I'm you know, sort of being careful when I say this. The actual film itself never fails to deliver at all. It's not like I was looking at watches or getting angry or tapping my feet or anything like that. You're intrigued the entire way through the plot, but I was very aware I was watching a film because of its length. It's like, while I was sitting there, I was like, wow, I have been in a cinema for a very long time. And that's something that I never like to feel in a cinema. And
I felt satisfied by the film. Its story is is interesting. I think that, as you said, as while we were watching the trailer, you said that poor guy. I mean, Ewan McGregor's character is dumped on from beginning to end in that film. He gets embroiled in this thing. He has no idea what he's getting into. Mm. And when he starts to unravel this whole mystery, you start to think, get out, go, leave, go away, you know?
Well, the other thing that I like, which is a rare thing for me to say for Ewan McGregor, is that he really does a good job playing the part because his character is so meek. Like, and Ewan McGregor is not, you know, sort of an action star in any manner or form, but the character is so meek. It's like the entire time he's there, he's very kind of downtrodden and he's always avoiding and he's always, he really is that kind of ghost writer-esque kind of a character where he kind of sits in the background and everything happens around.
Well, he actually says at one point, if I do my job right, you don't know I exist.
Yes.
And that's kind of his entire life. And there's actually one biting comment in the film where somebody actually says, why don't you write your own thing?
Yeah.
And if you were so good, why haven't you written your own stuff?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, it's kind of a biting comment to him because that's, you know, he makes a living ghostwriting other people's stuff, you know? And I think Ewan McGregor, actually, I find Ewan McGregor is a completely hit and miss actor. I find that when he is well handled and when he knows the material and when he's working on it, he actually does a really good job. And I think at other times, Ewan McGregor falls completely flat and you sit there and go, God, what the hell are you doing? You know? And I think this, in this particular case, I think Ewan McGregor does a really good job. The other person who I thought was doing a very interesting job, because I actually had to lean to you at one point and ask you, because she's playing her age, for one thing, which I thought was really amazing, considering all the Sex and the City junk that's been out lately. Mm. But Kim Cattrall does a really good job playing the cold bitch, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And not only playing cold bitch, but with British dialect. Mm. And I thought, wow, that's... Because actually, at one point, I'm looking at her going, it looks like Kim Cattrall. It doesn't sound like her. She's not as glamorous as she has been in the past. And I actually leaned to her and said, is that Kim Cattrall? And you went, yeah. And that's like... Screw, you know?
Oh, wow. According to Octane, apparently Hugh Grant was offered the lead. I'm really glad that that didn't happen.
Look, I like Hugh Grant, but once again, Hugh Grant needs to be in the right role.
I don't actually, it's not that I don't like him, it's just that I find that he's always the same character. And
that's why he has to be
in
the right role.
I mean, but the problem with that is that I've just exhausted my ability to watch him in those roles now.
It's but when you think back to classic Hugh Grant, you think back to Four Weddings and a Funeral, you think back to even when he played the Prime Minister in Love Actually, he was right on target. You know, because he's playing what he's most comfortable playing.
Yeah, well, this wasn't that.
No, and this he would not have suited at all. He actually, Hugh Grant did try a thriller once before, if you remember. What was it? Extreme Measures with Gene Hackman.
Funnily enough, though, probably the most he's ever acted in his entire
was that
career.
Film.
Because, like, as much as... because I bought that on DVD and a bargain bin for $3. And I actually watched it expecting junk.
I watched it on VHS many years ago.
And I was surprised at his performance. Like, it really kind of upset me because the film itself is a mess.
It's appalling.
But he is actually quite good. And especially the scene right at the end of the film where he lets out this big tirade of kind of, you know, sort of words against the other main character. I was sitting there going, wow, you can actually do something apart from charming and stuttering. But yeah, I've never seen it since. And no, I don't think he could have done this.
No, I don't think he could have done this either. And also, according to Octane, Eli Wallach is 94 years old. So it's not surprising that he looked like he was a million years old.
Wow.
Eli Wallach is for those who don't know, was a staple of things like Sergio Leone films and stuff like that. I mean, the man has been around for years and years. And I love Eli Wallach. And it's kind of sad in one way to see him so old because he looks so frail. But it's also still so nice to see him on screen.
Yeah.
I love Eli Wallach. Look, the film is, as we said, it's a political intrigue thriller, and as far as solving that issue, it works. It plays politics to a point where it's not boring, but keeps you interested in what's going on. You are intrigued by the mystery. You are intrigued by what happened to the original ghost writer. Mm-hmm. You are intrigued by how our writer is going to get out of this situation.
I have to give a huge shout out to whoever was in charge of the sound, because a lot of the tension in this film is kind of slow camera angles and that kind of chase kind of mechanic that you have in certain scenes with the kind of rising sort of sound and sort of low sweeping shots. Like he's at one stage being chased by another car, and that scene was probably one of my favorites of the entire film because of the fact that it's that great kind of... It really feels like it's something out of kind of a Hitchcock thriller or something like that. And I really love that about it. So.
Yeah, well, it feels like a Hitchcock thriller. It really has that tone going all the way through it. I will absolutely agree with you on the fact that the photography is beautiful. I mean, it's stunning to look at. It's just gorgeous. And it's got that Polanski... we were talking about this after we saw the film. It's got that Polanski, those little Polanski weird sense of humor, European touches that you don't see a lot of in American films. It's the one I want to bring up, and this isn't really a spoiler because it's not plot driven, but there's the gardener. And you see the gardener three or four times throughout the beginning of the film, whenever they're coming in and out of the house, and he's sweeping up the leaves. This eternal battle, sweeping up these leaves in this very leafy area. And then there's this one shot about halfway through the film. Ewan McGregor looks out the window, and for no apparent reason, Polanski cuts to a cutaway, which shows the gardener with his wheelbarrow full of leaves, and the wind blows all the leaves out of his wheelbarrow. Exactly. And you sit there and go, you didn't need that shot in any way, shape, or form, but it's just, it's beautiful texture to this film. According to Octane, it says, according to IMDb, Polanski oversaw post from prison. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Obviously, minimum security.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need a Skype line, and I need... well, if he did oversee post, and this is the results, and I'm going to say he was obviously a bit distracted. I'm a bit disappointed with the post.
Well, dude, not, I mean, to be fair, the man was in prison.
Well, there is that. Yeah, all right,
if
so
you want to say it.
So we have to ask the question that we go around the table with whenever we have it. It's only you and me this time. But question is, would you recommend the film?
You know, not to everyone. To my older friends, to people that enjoy a thriller, sure. But this isn't one of those ones I would, because it will miss some people. It's like people like Cullum, who we had on the show last week and things like that. He probably will really enjoy that film. He likes a slow burn. He liked Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and so on and so forth. And I think he would actually really enjoy this film because it's done by an expert director. You know what I mean? It's not a fresh new person or anything like that.
It feels like a seasoned person.
Exactly. Doing, so. And in doing that, it's like you said, because we watched the atrocious The Loved Ones.
Oh, God, that's for another show.
And we watched that earlier in the week, and then you said, I think you said it best when you said Polanski's worst will be better than anything that director could give us, and it's so true. It's like, it doesn't matter how bad it is, it's always going to have way more effort than you'll get out of most films. So I think if you're a seasoned veteran of film, if you enjoy film for film, not just for a story, then definitely go see this film.
Absolutely. And I would say that I would actually recommend it to most people, but as I said to Josh, it's one of those films where I said I would recommend it with caveats. So it's a sort of film where you would say it's a good film, you'll really enjoy it, but be aware it's not his best film, or be aware that, you know. So it's one of those sort of films where you sit there and go, it's a good film, but because you have to give caveats to your review, you sit there and go, it's not a perfect film, you know? No, and if you do like an interesting political potboiler, then this is for you. That's the thing. If you want to invest the time in it, then you're going to enjoy it a lot. For those who are looking for Bourne-style political films, this is not it.
No,
not at all. Now, just to let you know, The Ghost Writer opens nationally in Australia on, I think it's August 12th. I think it's the 12th, something around there. So if you want to see it, that's when you're going to be able to catch up with it. Okay? All right, I think we're not going to go into a spoiler zone because... Nope. You don't want to spoil a film like this.
Films like this just can't be spoiled.
No, you really just, you want to, the beauty of this film is I went to it with very little expectation. So if you go with very little expectation of knowing what the story is or anything like that, you're probably going to get more out of it.
Damn right. Okay? No, I agree.
All right, let's have a little talk about some cinema buzz or entertainment buzz that's happening around town at the moment. And, of course, we're still getting lots of dribs and drabs of information from Comic-Con. Comic-Con is wrapping up now. I think it's actually just wrapped up. But we're still getting some information out over this week. One of the things that we got was Zack Snyder's new trailer for his film Sucker Punch. Now, I don't know about you, Josh, but this is a film I knew nothing about.
I still don't. I'm actually, I am about to watch it for the first time with you guys.
I heard he was making a film called Sucker Punch, and I thought, what the hell is it? I didn't know what it was. And at Comic-Con, they unveiled the first trailer. So have a look at this. This is Zack Snyder. Now, for those who don't know, Zack Snyder is director of Watchmen and the Dawn of the Dead remake and 300. So this is his new film.
You are safe. It's all safe. What you're imagining right now, that place can be as real as any pain. Don't be afraid. You have all the weapons you need. Your fight for survival starts right now.
I'm gonna escape from here. There's armed guards everywhere. If Blue finds out, we're dead. We're already dead.
Begin your journey. If you do, it will set you free.
You know what that is? Yeah. That's a film where a man has sat there and heard people say to him, you can't put dragons, machine guns,
Zeppelins, planes
crashing, Zeppelins, sword girls fighting in very little clothing, and put them all into one film. And he's gone, just watch me.
Just watch me.
That's all that is. I have no idea what that is.
I have no idea what it's about. It looks like some sort of adolescent sex fantasy gamer goodness.
Now,
God
I'm
knows.
Not. I'm definitely going to say that doesn't necessarily make it a bad film.
No,
it could
no.
be fantastic. And based on the visual style, I think I'm going to get Pirates of the Caribbean treatment out of this, number three, which is that I will walk out of that film and have no idea what I've seen. I will just know that what I saw was amazing.
Now, I will let you know, I haven't been able to capture it yet, but there is also an early teaser for the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean film kicking around from Comic-Con as well. But I haven't got it for today's show. So we don't have to subject ourselves to that. But yes, no. stuff for that has been coming out. Octane says, music fail? I actually didn't mind the music. It was actually kind of throwback to 80s.
It's
kind of
bizarre.
Weird. But the whole film is odd. Okay, you just look at that trailer going, I have no idea
what you're
on about, but it looks fun. It's like, I want to see, you know, Japanese katanas and pistols and dragons and big things with huge machine guns and Zeppelins crashing and planes fly. You know, if they just pack all those visuals in there, I'll be there.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, I don't even care anymore.
Snake says, wow, it looks good.
Yeah, no, I don't know what that was, but I am definitely in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have a look at it. Look, we're going to get more on that. It doesn't come out until March 2011, so we will get a more detailed trailer as it goes on. This is obviously just a teaser to launch us into this. Len Wiseman, for those who don't know who Len Wiseman is, he directed the first two Underworld films, I believe it was, and Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard. Die Hard 4 for the Australian listeners. He has just been signed to direct Total Recall. I got to tell you, I'm not so down with this. Now, if Len Wiseman was directing a new film version of I Can Remember It For You Wholesale, which is the original Philip K. Dick story that Total Recall is based on, I would be more down with it. But from what I can read or what I can fathom, he's remaking Total Recall. He's not actually.
I don't get that.
So he's remaking the film, because the film is actually very different to the book. They went off on a very different tangent with the book.
Is it possible that it's just they're just saying that just to keep people out of the loop, or do you think that that's like that? I can't imagine it being a shot for shot kind of thing.
I don't think it's a shot for shot. I think it's going to be, according to this, a contemporized adaptation. Which, whatever that means. I love how they throw these buzzwords around where they sit there and go, it's going to be this, you know? And you go, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. Anyway, it's also being written by what's his name? Kurt Wimmer. Columbia Pictures apparently hired Kurt Wimmer about a year ago to write the screenplay. Now, Kurt Wimmer, for those who don't know, is the director and writer behind Equilibrium and Ultraviolet.
You know, which gets a bad rap, but I actually kind of like that.
I liked Equilibrium. I hated Ultraviolet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I thought Equilibrium with its whole concept of gun-fu was actually...
It's not only the gun-fu for me, it was that whole concept of lack of emotion, which I thought is actually done really badly in the film, because...
It was really a riff on 1984, is all it was.
Oh, no, but I mean more just the fact that it was kind of hard to believe it when sometimes certain characters would sort of show something that is, in essence, an emotion, and this would be one of the characters that theoretically doesn't. It's a hard line to draw,
yeah.
You know, but, yeah, no, still a good...
Look, I will reserve judgment on a remake of Total Recall until we find or at least see something from it. But I kind of feel like it's a bad idea. I don't know. Chat room, what do you think? More like Fahrenheit 451, Dave. Well, yeah, there's elements of Fahrenheit 451 as well.
Oh, dude, he just tried to call you on
He
that.
Tried to call me, like, but I would actually...
More like this, Dave.
Well, actually, no, I will say that Fahrenheit has shades of that, but I will also go so far as to say that Equilibrium's biggest influence has to be Brave New World, with the whole idea of the drugs to manage mood and all this sort of stuff. So it's very much a Brave New World. Kurt Wimmer really did borrow from a whole bunch of sources for Equilibrium and then added the whole gun-fu thing to it, which kind of made it his own. But, I mean, there's a whole thing about the post-apocalypse... not post-apocalypse, that's the film we're coming up to. The whole idea of this whole postmodern world where Big Brother is watching over us and emotions are controlled and, you know, and all this sort of stuff, it's been done over and over again. I mean, we could also look at Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which of course became Blade Runner, but the original source book of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, they also dial in emotions in the morning with their dial-in devices. I mean, we go back through classic literature and we can find all sorts of stuff. In fact, funny you bring up Fahrenheit 451. I actually watched that again the other night. It was on ABC TV late at night. And it started, and I went, oh, I haven't seen this in a while. And it started, and I found myself glued to the TV. I couldn't leave.
Yeah.
And I ended up there for an hour and a half, 2 hours watching the film. Still holds up. I mean, it's very dated in its style and everything, but really, really interesting film all the same.
It's the concepts that keep you watching that film, in
my
opinion.
Yeah.
It's just the bizarreness of everything that is that world. Anyway.
All right. So that's Len Wiseman. Let's move past that, because I think it's something much more interesting than that, which is The Walking Dead. Now, you're reading The Walking Dead. I'm reading The Walking Dead. For those who don't know what it is, The Walking Dead is a comic book series, which is now up to, I believe, issue 74. It could be 76 by now. I'm up to issue 60, I think. And I think you're further back than that. But it is a staggering comic book. All right, there are to give you an idea, for those who don't take comic books seriously, this comic book leaves me breathless at times. There are actually times where it actually becomes hard to read.
It's very grueling at times.
It's grueling. It's the emotion, and you start to get attached to characters, and they'll just kill them off without any notice. And you sit there and go, you have no idea where this thing is going at any given time. It is a masterpiece of literature, even though it's in comic book form. And I look forward to reading it. I read it every night. And I'm actually sad when I hit issue 75, then I'm going to have to start waiting for the issues to come out. But the reason we bring it up on this show is because, of course, we know that there's a TV series coming out. Which is being written and directed by Frank Darabont. And I've got a few details on it. First of all, I found out that season one is 6 episodes. So it's like a limited series is what they're doing.
It's kind of, it's almost British TV.
It's almost,
small blocks.
It's sort of AMC, the same network that produces Mad Men and so forth. So they've got a good track record of allowing people to do what they do right. Frank Darabont is directing and writing. I don't know if he's directed every episode of the six, but I know he's directed a fair few of them. He may have directed all six. There is already word going around that it's been so well received by AMC that season two looks like almost a guarantee.
And that's how you want to start a series.
Absolutely. They're actually saying that it says, how do we know this? Because they're actually doing a online competition, basically, for the people who live in the area where they're doing location shoots for Walking Dead. And they're, you can win trips to the location and also win the chance to be a zombie in the series.
That's awesome.
So,
as if you wouldn't want to do
that. Absolutely. So if you are in that area and you know where this is happening, go to AMC's website and you could probably enter. It says Tuesday, July 20th through to Sunday, August 15th. Entrants may enter the sweepstakes one time only throughout the entire sweepstakes period. So it looks like they are gearing up for a second season, which is very good. But more importantly than that, we actually... Oh, and we've also got this photo. Here you go. This is the cast of the series. And I got to tell you, the casting is perfect. I mean, they all look just fantastic. But more importantly than that, it leaked from Comic-Con. Now, I'm just going to warn everybody in advance. We've already embedded this at geekactually.com. I don't know how long that embed will last because I'm sure it's going to get pulled down. But somebody videotaped the screen during the launch campaign for The Walking Dead. Now, we're actually going to leave the mics open so we can talk during this, and it's only going to be playing because the sound quality isn't great. But I thought we'd play that bootleg, and because Josh has read it as well, and so we can have a look. And anybody in the chat room who has actually read the comic book, chime in at this, because this is very interesting to have a look at, because the thing that caught my attention about this, whoops, sorry. The thing that caught my attention about this is how faithful it is to the comic book. So as you can see, it's crappy quality. So this is all from the first issue, mind you. This is actually from the first four panels or five panels of the first issue. He's good casting for Rick. I mean, so far, I mean, we look at this. These are, I can actually see the issues.
You can see the frames.
Yeah.
Like, there are, like, particular shots. Callison, there is quite a bit to the first issue that is very 28 Days Later.
Now, that's actually interesting he brings that up because somebody actually mentioned that when this trailer first came out. Interestingly enough, the first issue of Walking Dead actually came out slightly before 28 Days Later. Mm. So there's a lot of talk about it. And people say they copied each other, but they didn't because they're around the same time. So there's that theory in life where they say, if you think of a great thing, somebody else is also going to think of it.
Yeah.
My wife
and son, they're
alive. There's the horse from the first issue.
Mm.
Military protection, shelter, food. They told people to go there. Said they were working out how to solve this thing. Well, that sounds like a good deal.
Look, the one thing, they may not seem like much one at a time, but in a group all over,
can you watch your ass?
I'm very curious to know where the first six episodes will actually go to in the series.
Well, I wonder whether they'll do one to a comic book, because you could easily do an hour on each.
Yeah.
Just outside the city. Hello? Damn it. We don't want people away from the city. Folks have no idea where they're getting.
Hey, Octane says, Darabont? Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
Okay, we're going to leave that there. I mean, we get the idea. If you do want to see the rest of that, it goes for about 5 minutes. It's actually, it's a fair hoof of video that they showed, and it is embedded on geekactually.com. If you do want to see it, I suggest you go have a look at it really, really soon, because that sort of video doesn't stay on YouTube long. Official trailer hasn't been released yet.
Yeah.
So, the official one can't be far away, because the series is actually debuting in the fall. So in the States, so it can't be far away. But the other thing I thought I'd just bring up about The Walking Dead very quickly is that the comic book is in black and white, which I love about the comic book, and it really does create the mood. Now, Darabont apparently originally wanted to shoot the series in black and white. Now,
dude, how old school zombie film does it feel? Like, just with even the way that they shoot the zombies, like, on the screens when you're watching it, it's that really kind of, like, locked-off shot. It's none of this new kind of, like, fast-paced camera
movement. No, it's so Romero original.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so Romero, like, either kind of, you know, sort of Night of the Living Dead to kind of, like, Dawn of the Dead. It's really that kind of a feel, and that's why I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. I think this is fantastic. And the story, it really comes down to, there was a great quote that comes from a long time ago, which basically, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get down to it, The Walking Dead is sold purely on the fact that this is great drama. And these characters are really well written, and we've gone along so long with these characters in this comic book now that you are part of their lives and you feel when things are going on. And let me tell you, I'm up to, as I say, issue 60. There are some events, Josh, in this last 10 issues that I have just read that actually make you sit there and you have to step away from the comic, and you sit there and go, I don't know how much more of this I can take, because it is just a grueling existence that they have to go through. And some of the events that take place are really hard hitting.
I loved in the third issue, it starts with that one panel, which was by another comic writer by memory or something like that. And it was in kind of a defense thing to how people were reacting to the thing. And he was saying it's not a thing about the dead. It's about celebrating life.
That's right.
And it really is. It's about just the grueling.
Yeah, the zombies themselves are back characters. We don't dwell on them. No. They're just this ever-present thing. Mm. And what's actually very interesting is that after you get past about the first 30 issues, the more dangerous things out there are other humans.
Yeah.
And that plays a big part coming up, where you find more survivors and how people have changed because of trying to survive. And there's this whole inner thing with Rick, the main character, about how he's changing and the things that he will do to protect his family that he would never have thought of before. You know?
Yeah, no, there's been a couple of bits, because I've read more issues than the last time we talked. Mm. There's a couple of issues where you just sit there and he does things that you didn't think he was capable of, because you know him as a character, because you follow him, and he starts out with that very ever-present zombie film hero-esque kind of a mentality, and that's broken very quickly.
And this whole concept of morals and everything else, it all starts to go out the window. It all starts to go with, as somebody says, I think it's like halfway through where I am, somebody actually said at one point, there's a character who actually says, the rules that we used to live by don't apply anymore. Mm. We have to create new rules because it's a different world.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they're all coming to terms with. And if you haven't read Walking Dead, go out and get it and have a read.
It's available now in hardback versions for about 26 issues. Yeah, the volumes. There's like 10 or 15 issues inside.
And it's also available on iPhone, iPad. It's on Comixology, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So you can get it.
That's where I originally got it.
Yeah, you can get it digitally as well. It is well worth having a look at it. The Walking Dead TV series comes out in October. Now, what I was saying about the black and white was the exciting part that I love. Now, I don't think we got this in Australia. I'm going to go double check this afternoon, because I don't think we got this. But apparently the U.S. edition of The Mist, which is also Frank Darabont, he wanted The Mist to be in black and white, because he said that there was kind of created that whole mood and everything. It was originally meant to be black and white. The studio got cold feet and made him put it in color. Mm. So it shot in color, and then he was ultimately released in color. On the DVD of The Mist in America, there's a black and white edition.
Wow.
So you can actually watch it in black and white or watch it in color. Now, I don't think ours got that, so I'm going to go have a look at that and confirm. But what we've just found out is for the DVD of The Walking Dead, it's going to be in black and white and color. So you'll be able to watch it the way that Frank Darabont actually plans it to be seen. He can't put it in black and white for network television. They won't let him, but he will release it on DVD in black and white.
It's kind of hard to have a high-def black and white. You can do it.
Oh,
but
you can do it.
Oh, you can do it.
No doubt about it.
But people don't react well to that. People associate black and white with old technology.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. It's sad. Okay, last piece of entertainment news, and this is just very quickly, and then we've got one more trailer, and then we're going to go into our second review. Very quickly, Old Spice guy, Isaiah Mustafa, has now been signed to star in a new feature film opposite Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, wow.
So, good for him. He's picked up a career out of Old Spice. Also, just as a side note, somebody asked, all the ads are great, but really, have the ads increased Old Spice sales? Well, according to something that just came out the other day, they said apparently their sales have gone up 106%.
Wow.
Since the Old Spice ads and Isaiah Mustafa started to air. So, there you go. The man is a legend. I want to see him in a romantic comedy with Jennifer Aniston. I think this will be very funny. Silverfish Handcatch. All right. Last thing we're going to talk about, and then we're going to go into In the Loop. Let's have a look at this. This is quite short. This is the new Red Band trailer for Machete. This is Robert Rodriguez's new film.
This
got premiered this week as well. Now, just a warning, if you are at all squeamish, look away now, because it's pretty brutal. But for everybody in our chat room, this is also embedded at geekactually.com. You can have a look at it there. Here is the Red Band trailer for Machete.
Machete. He's laying waste to everything that gets in his fucking path.
That looks like me.
Up and watch.
Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo.
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez.
With Jessica
Alba.
And Robert De Niro.
And Robert De Niro.
Machete.
It's not safe for you to be here.
Not looking for safe.
No, I mean, it's not safe for me for you to be here. I absolve you of all your sins. Now get the fuck out.
God, great, I love ending. That man.
Great ending to that trailer. Now, for the chat room, yes, all that staggering and jittery and jumpiness of the trailer, that's actually ill intended. That's how it is. Yeah. That's just Rodriguez is making it like a B-grade grindhouse film. So that's the way it is. We've just had Josh also talk to me during the trailer, and our chat room, Octane, thank you very much, has said that, we only got the standard version of The Mist on DVD in this country. I believe, now that I've actually said it all and everything, I believe it's actually a Criterion Collection in the States. So I think that's why they've got it. Okay, we have a second movie review. This will actually be short. We're not going to give any spoilers away. We just thought we'd bring this up because we never actually talked about it at the time. It kind of went right past us.
Yeah.
And I recently picked it up on Blu-ray, and considering it's a political theme today, I thought we'd have a look at this. This is the film called In the Loop, directed by Armando... I get this name wrong probably, but I think it's Iannucci. And written by Jesse Armstrong, Simon Blackwell, Armando Iannucci, and Tony Roche. It's a spin-off of the British TV series The Thick of It, which also featured the main character, which is the Malcolm Tucker character. It stars Peter Capaldi as Malcolm Tucker, Simon Foster, Mimi Kennedy, Anna Klumsky, James Gandolfini, Olivia Poulette, and Gina McKee.
And don't forget Steve Coogan.
And Steve Coogan.
Yes.
Now, I have their official synopsis because this film is a film that really has no synopsis.
Well, its story is kind of also what you don't want to tell.
So no,
it's
that's
kind of
right.
difficult to give a good
synopsis.
So
what they actually wrote on, this, the source of this is Loop Film Productions. They actually said, the U.S. president and U.K. prime minister fancy a war, but not everyone agrees that a war is a good thing. The U.S. General Miller doesn't think so, and neither does the British Secretary of State for International Development, Simon Foster. But after Simon accidentally backs military action on TV, he suddenly has a lot of friends in Washington, D.C. If Simon can get in with the right D.C. people, if his entourage of one can sleep with the right intern, and if they can both stop the Prime Minister's chief spin doctor, Malcolm Tucker, rigging the vote at the UN, they can halt the war. If they don't, well, they can always sack their director of communications, Judy, who they never liked anyway, who's back at home dealing with voters from dealing with voters with blocked drains and a man who's angry about a collapsing wall. So that's basically their plot. And here's the trailer for it very quickly, which unfortunately is not a Red Band. We needed a Red Band trailer for this.
Yeah, we really did.
But this is the theatrical trailer.
Is war unforeseeable, Minister?
Look, for the plane in the fog, the mountain is unforeseeable, but then it is suddenly very real and unforeseeable. Thank you so much.
He did not say unforeseeable. You may have heard him say that, but he did not say that.
I don't think war is unforeseeable.
What is it then?
I don't know. Foreseeable? No.
No!
Wars do sometimes work.
You know I'm against the war. Where is the intelligence?
There is an informant.
Iceman.
I don't name them.
That is your career.
We request carbonated and non-carbonated waters.
You know, they're all kids in Washington.
It's like Bugsy Malone, but with real guns.
You're my Kunta Kinte. Go out and get your laptop.
You're going to use him as a meat puppet.
I'm meat. A prime cut.
Whip him.
Whip him?
Whip what?
What does that mean?
Well, I think it just means... Actually, I don't know what it means.
You're an idiot.
If
should be easy peasy lemon squeezy.
No, it won't. It will be difficult, difficult, lemon difficult.
Ron Weasley.
John and Yoko.
Baby from Eraserhead.
The woman from The Crying Game.
The boy from The Shining.
Nazi Julie Andrews.
Seaside donkey.
You're a useless piece of S.
Star, star team.
You got no idea where my balls have been.
What was with the homoerotic tension?
Scathingly funny. A smart, sophisticated committee.
Committee?
You must have misheard me.
I misheard the word committee.
There are a lot of words, Karen. Kansas City. Kitty.
Itty.
Itty? Itty is not a word, Bob.
It's about war.
Flammable cheese.
Pros and cons.
Perverts.
Lubricated horse
meat.
Oh, big meat.
Okay, you've lost me.
General Flintstone. Have you even killed anybody?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, falling asleep on someone, that doesn't count.
I will marshal all the forces of darkness to hound you to an assisted suicide.
This is the problem. Civilians wanting to go to war. Once you've been there, you never want to go again unless you absolutely have to. It's like France.
It's like France.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Look, there's no spoilers here. All we're going to do is a quick review. I actually watched this for the first time. We've got slightly different opinions. I thought it was magnificent. Nobody swears like Malcolm Tucker. I mean,
the man is just the epitome of foul. Like, he embodies the very word foul. And it's just incredible, the shit that comes out of that man's mouth. He stands
and it's
in a
non-stop.
And what I love the most about his character is just the fact that he just has this ability to just pick people and just pick something about them he doesn't like and just make that their new name. The bit where he's standing in the room, there's like three people around him and he just names each one of them. The baby from Eraserhead, the girl, what is it, the dude from The Crying Game?
The Nazi Julie Andrews. the film is his film. I mean, let's face it. If you didn't have Peter Capaldi, the film wouldn't be what it is.
Oh, yeah.
But that being said, the side character. Oh shit! Hold on. Side characters are also very entertaining. Mm. And what's his name? Simon Foster as the inept MP who keeps putting his foot in his mouth.
Oh man, that guy is just terrible.
He's hysterical. And I love. And as I say, the communications minister Judy, who they all hate. She doesn't do anything against them. She's just trying to hold it together.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, the film is both a wonderful mess and both just, like, I mean, even for someone that's watching it with no interest in political film, it's really about the dialogue. The film comes down to the dialogue, and the dialogue is amazing.
Yes.
Like,
it
the
is
lines.
For fans of that sharp, clever British sardonic humor.
Yes. Now, in saying that, it also falls into the trap of the fact that it basically is just shot like every British TV show. And that's one little problem that I do have with it is just that like I said, it's all about the dialogue and the character interaction. Don't watch this film if you want anything to happen because it's just locked off shots of rooms.
Absolutely.
And
or lots
talking.
Of handheld work.
Because exactly.
Lots of following people around and just kind of fly on the wall stuff, which is very, you know, The Office. It's very.
Exactly.
You know, it's that style. And I've never actually seen In the Thick of It, or The Thick of It, I should say, which is the series that it's kind of a spin-off of. But I imagine it's shot very much the same way. It's not about the production values.
Yeah.
This is about characters, it's about dialogue, and it's about working through a circumstance that has happened and the resolution that they try and get to that story. And it just shows you how imbecilic politics is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about who's
I just
playing
love the fact,
who.
Exactly, and I just love the fact that most of the people that are there are not really that intelligent. Like, and I think that's probably why I like it the most, is because they're just normal people. And they make mistakes, and they do stupid things. And it's all the background behind what is said. Like, really, there's only about two things that actually happen on TV or in the public eye that are actually out there for people to see. The rest of it is all just behind the scenes. Script-wise and dialogue, dialect, is just perfect. Like, the differences in the comedy between the British and the US are just brilliant. Like, the fact that they have very distinct humor styles.
Yes.
And when they clash, that's one funny, but also they have their own kind of like, it's almost like if you got the British office and the American office and tried to
mash them together.
Yeah, if you tried to do an episode with them all together, that's kind of what you would come up with, because you've got kind of the humor of sort of miscommunication between the two, and then you've got the individual miscommunication between them.
And it's also that there's that conflict in the sense of how politics in England is very much for the older, and in America it's all very young and hip, you know. And so it's like, and you've got this conflict of ageism. You've got they're constantly referring to
the bit where he sits down and he's not even in the meeting for probably 20 seconds. But the main character you were speaking of before, what was his name again?
This is Peter Capaldi. Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah, Malcolm Tucker's character sits down in a room for less than 10 seconds, and some guy walks in to talk to him who looks, what is it? He's like 16 or something.
He's 24.
No, he explains that later. No, he says he's 23, and 23 and 24 in 9 months. We can sit here and wait if you'd like. And he just gets up and leaves and spits some of the most atrocious dialogue just at this kid that it's just completely not funny. My favorite line of the entire film comes from the Sopranos character.
Oh, Gandolfini, yeah.
James Gandolfini, who says an amazing line to someone in a heat of argument, where he says, "I am going to punch you so hard that you will shit teeth." That is by far one of the most brutal things you could say to someone ever.
It's also interesting to note in this film, because I actually sat there watching the film for the first 20 minutes going, I know her, I know her, I know her. Why do I know that face? Mm-hmm. And that's because Anna Chlumsky, who we mentioned in the cast list. Now, Anna Chlumsky, for the young ones in our audience who don't know, was the young girl from My Girl. And you sit there and go, she's disappeared for years. Obviously, she went to school and all this sort of stuff. But she's now come back as an adult actress, and she holds up really well, you know? And she actually does a good job, and she's actually very pretty. And you know, but she still has that one, that certain look to her where you sit there and go, I know you. But anyway, so I thought Anna Chlumsky did a really good job in it. Look, I recommend this film to anybody, but I will say that if you are not a fan of that British style dialogue heavy,
and
character-driven,
very awkward humor,
awkward situational humor that things like The Office does, then it's not for you. But if you do like really clever dialogue-driven character pieces, then this is just, it's a riot. It is well worth having a look at. It's on Blu-ray and DVD. Josh, would you recommend it?
I would recommend it to anybody that, like you said, is into very quick dialogue. Anyone that likes a good back-and-forth kind of the story. Fans of things like anyone that thought The West Wing was just really boring. I would say you might actually enjoy this.
Yeah, it's like The West Wing behind closed doors.
it's like West Wing meets The Office. That's the best way I can describe this. So, I did enjoy it. So, I probably don't like it quite as much as Dave, but the humor in itself, watch it just for all those lines you see in the trailer. There, the whole film is just that.
And if
that.
You really want to be sold, if you do like really, really sharp, salty dialogue, let's say it that way. If you really want to just have one moment to help you sell it, on YouTube, go to YouTube and search for Malcolm Tucker, okay? And you will find mashups where they've taken whole sequences of Malcolm Tucker profanities and just mashed them together so you can actually have a look at.
That's
and if
awesome.
That doesn't sell you to see this film, then probably nothing will, because it is just joyous to hear him go. And from the minute he walks in, he's just profanities are pouring out of his mouth. There is nothing like the way he talks.
Yes.
I haven't heard,
film starts with him just going.
Yeah, I haven't heard profanities like that in so long. It just makes you sit there going,
what's he going to say next?
Come on, let him rip.
I want Malcolm Tucker action figures. I'm just going to put that out there. I just want to be able to pull a line. Just whenever I'm in a bad mood, just pull it and hear a line about how bad I am. And I'll just
be
like,
that would be awesome.
Malcolm Tucker, you made my day.
All right, well, we're running out of time as always. We're going to get into very quickly. We're going to go through our lists of five. Mm-hmm. This week, our list is five guilty pleasures. Now, this is kind of a hard one. All right, let me define what this is. It's films that you know are bad, or possibly even bad for you. Okay,
yep.
But you just can't help yourself from watching them, all right? And you derive a pleasure, but it's sort of a pleasure behind closed doors. You don't want to tell people that you actually watch it. And if somebody mentioned it in public, you'd sit there and go, yeah, really bad film. But in quiet fact, you actually go and watch it all night long.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the guilty pleasures list. Now, this is a very hard list for me because, well, it's actually a very easy list for me, but it's hard to do it for the show because I didn't want to just tap into my resource.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who wears my guilty pleasures on my sleeve. You just have to go to geekactually.com, look up the Gloriously Wonderful Bad List, and you'll see I have hosts of films that nobody in their right mind would watch, and I derive a great deal of pleasure from them. Mm-hmm. So I have actually used two of them from that list, because there are two that really do stand out. But I have tried to add a few new ones. So I'm trying not to just mine my list, because it's kind of cheating. But we'll start with you, Joss. What's number five guilty pleasure?
My number five is actually a film which in itself is not necessarily a bad film. It's very Breakfast Club-ish in the fact that it's basically all about dialogue and it's all about conversations. And as a film, the film is really not about anything. It's just about a group of people that work at a record store, but it in essence...
Oh, I think I know the film!
Yeah, it in essence sort of holds in itself everything that is the 90s. And for that reason, number five is Empire Records, which I will watch on loop and not be bothered. I know every line of dialogue.
I think I've seen Empire Records twice. Not one of my favorite films. It wouldn't go onto my list because I actually much prefer...
But that's because, like, for me, it's all about that generation.
Do you know what the funny thing is? When Empire Records came out, I was working in a record store. So the film that I actually preferred was... John Cusack film.
Oh, you mean High Fidelity?
Yes, High Fidelity.
Yes, but I think that's a good film.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's
Empire Records, I know, isn't necessarily a good film, but it's a guilty pleasure because I just look at it and I'm just like, wow. I just, every time.
Oh, man, I just realized I have to change one of mine. I just remembered The Ultimate.
Okay, well, how about what are you doing?
Okay, here we go. My number five. Are you ready for this one? I'm ready. This is going to make your head explode. Mm. I'm going to put The Postman with Kevin Costner.
Oh, now you see, I've never seen it.
The Postman is truly atrocious.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word.
Yeah.
It is, even for its widescreen glory, badly shot. It is badly written. It is badly acted. It is just so stupid in every way. And yet, there is a certain pleasure that can be derived by watching this train wreck run into a wall that you just cannot help yourself but watch. Mm. I feel the same way about Waterworld.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could almost put them as a slash and put the two together, because they are both almost identical in that same just amazing amount of money that was poured into these films, and the fact that The Postman is also 3 hours long.
Yeah.
You know, you just sit there and go, I can put Postman on in the background and get on to do other work and just have a drone in the background. Mm. So that's my number five. Okay, number four.
Number four for me is probably the only generic title on my list. Uh-huh. The one that people could probably pick for me, and I have actually done a review for this, but I was just so glad to finally own this on DVD for the first time in my life. It is Escape from Plan 9, because there's just no way to enjoy that film for being a good film. It is just, it is an art form in just how bad it is, and it goes right up there at the list of worst films ever. And you just watch it, and just the entire time you can sit there and grin, and there's just nothing about that film that I don't like, and I could watch it a billion times.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, my number four is, and there's going to be people who flame me for this, because there are people who actually think this is a great film, but my number four is Hackers. Because Hackers, I think, is remarkably stupid.
Wow. You just know? Wow. I can't believe you said that movie. No. It's just, it's that bad.
I think Hackers is remarkably stupid, but there is some gleeful point in me where you sit there and just go,
People thought
that's what computers were all about. And the director is actually, Julian Temple is actually on record as saying he knew nothing about computers when he wrote and directed this film. He just said, oh, yeah, it's something that people are interested in. He just made it all up. And concluding the part where they talk about they're getting the new computers out, the new high-speed G5s or whatever it was, at a time when we didn't even have G3s, I think it was at that point. But no, it was remarkably stupid. But the whole idea of going to hack the mainframe, man. You sit there and watch it, and Angelina Jolie with her little butch haircut, you know.
No,
you sit there and go, this film, I showed it to a class of IT students when I was teaching and said, this is everything that is wrong with making movies about IT. All right, so that's number four. Number three.
Number three for me is an action film. We talked about this before we went outside. This film is quite possibly the the worst collection of action.
And yet we love it.
Well, yes, because it's like, even when you break it up into its parts and just put the action scenes, they're quite good, but there is just so much wrong with this film. The closer you look, the more it just falls apart, because the more you're just looking at it and going, wait, wasn't that just, and there was, that doesn't even make sense. Commando is a truly awful film when you break it down.
And so many people will flame us down and go, no, Commando's irony, it's awesome. Watch it again.
Yeah, watch it again.
Commando is actually an awful film.
Yeah.
It's fun as all hell, but it is stupid as all hell.
It is just pure.
Callison
crap.
Says their number one is The Stupids with Tom Arnold. Yeah, but question is it a guilty pleasure? Would you go back and watch it again?
Exactly,
and again?
Exactly. I would watch Commando over and over again just for bad dialogue, crappy singlets made out of mesh.
But the string singlet was big in the 80s.
Yeah, no, but just not him. The incredibly camp acting of that particular
actor.
And
the explosion at the end where all the soldiers surrounding the building were just mannequins that fall over as the explosion goes
and the
up.
Car going down the hill that goes down the hill then past the car then goes back up the hill and crashes
and has all
it.
The scratches on one side and the next shot doesn't have any scratches then it's all scratched again.
Oh, there is just so much wrong with that film. Anyway, Dave, number three.
Oh, Callison says yes to Stupids. Yes, I would and have, much to the annoyance of people around me.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it that way. Dave,
okay,
number
my
three.
Number three is Howard the Duck, because I find this film absolutely astonishing. Here is a film they plowed so much money into, and George Lucas is reportedly a huge fan of the comic books. And to have made a film that is so far from the comic books, it's unbelievable. It bears no resemblance. This is the film that introduced us to animal-human sex, obviously, because we have that very awkward scene between Leah Thompson and Howard in the bed where she's wearing the sexy lingerie, basically saying, oh, Ducky, how are you? It's just you sit there going, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. And to the point where she pulls out the little duck condom out of his wallet. This is a kid's film.
Wow.
So if you haven't seen Howard the Duck, watch it. This film is glorious in how awful it is. And in fact, it is one of the two films on this show that are actually from the Gloriously Wonderful Bad List. I could watch Howard the Duck over and over and over again because it is just that bad. Staggering.
Yeah.
Number three, Josh.
Number two, I think you mean.
Number
two. Now, there's a little bit of lead up I have to do to this because the last two I'm very, very proud of personally for having these on my list. This film came out during a period of time where we were obsessed. We were obsessed with martial arts to the point where just America would just put it in randomly in strange places in action films just so that it could be there. And we decided to create a film where we took an American star and we made the whole thing about action and kung fu.
Oh, I know
and so
where this
so
is
forth.
Going.
And in concept alone, it's retarded. And then when you watch the film, it's just so much worse. It has wonderful scenes that I will never forget, including, sort of terrible breakdowns of how people fight. And, of course, my favorite things, which is ninjas on a beach. I am talking, of course, about American Ninja, just so bad. You must watch it.
Now,
it's
actually watched American Ninja again for the first time in many years. I watched it
Ninjas
again.
In Black. On a white beach.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And Brad
Dudikoff
as the American Ninja, possibly the worst actor on the face of the
planet. Oh yeah, no, absolutely. It is just incredible. It's just like you watch it and you're like, wow, you guys actually thought this was cool.
Now, I'm going to put a caveat here and say, I'm going to throw this in right now. We were going to save it till later, but seeing as you brought this up, I'm going to put in a caveat right now and say that my honorary mentions, I don't even have to name the films.
Yeah.
My honorary mentions is a production company. And I'm going to say that I can watch, without doubt, over and over and over again, anything produced by Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus of the Canon Group. These are the gentlemen who produced American
Ninja.
Oh,
yes, I know.
And they produced all of the Death Wish sequels. Not the original, but all the Death Wish sequels. They did most of the Chuck Norris films. They did Life Force. They did the remake of Invaders from Mars. They did Superman 4. In fact, if you go to the Gloriously Wonderful Bad List, you'll see that the top four or five films on that list are all Canon productions. These guys were the Selznicks of schlock. They were absolutely brilliant at producing. These guys were renowned for making movie contracts on napkins at Cannes. They were geniuses. That's they awesome. Produced hundreds of films in a very short period of time and then vaporized. They were gone as fast as they came. And I just love them. I love them because everything they touched was crap. And they are just geniuses at it. But American Ninja, great choice. And you know what? I would even go so far as to say that the four sequels are almost just as
glorious.
Dude,
they I only use one because it was the start of something amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My number two is Judge Dredd.
Oh, wow.
Judge Dredd is one of those films where I sit there and watch it and go, I was a huge fan of the comic books. And production-wise, spent a lot of money on this film. The special effects were absolutely brilliant in their day. And then, in the middle of it all, we put Stallone. Who is just so awful. And the dialogue is clunky and wooden.
And it has Rob Schneider.
And I got to tell you, I actually saw an advanced screening, a preview screening of Judge Dredd in Los Angeles in 1995 with temp music score. And it was one of those ones where you had to fill in the cards at the end of it. And at the end of that temp screening, Rob Schneider died. And the character, he died in the film. And I thought, great. And when I saw the film later and they bring him out on the stretcher at the end and he's going, I'm fine. Obviously in those cards, people are going, oh, why'd you kill Rob Schneider? And all I can say to all those people is, fuck you.
If you hadn't, we would have killed Rob Schneider.
Let the man die. I would have had much more respect for it. But anyway, so Judge Dredd. It's glorious. I sit there and I just watch it going, it's a mighty wreck. Yeah, it's a mighty wreck. And I've watched it many times and I own a copy downstairs. It is just a mighty wreck. Yeah. Number one.
Now you see.
My number one. My number one. I can't get around it.
No, so. You can't. But my number one is one of my most impressive films I've ever seen because I saw this one out of order. And I am a huge horror fan. And I will to this day defend this film because as ridiculous as it was, it showed us just how far we would take sequels just to continue a franchise. And when we thought we had run out of ideas, when we thought we had run out of ways to kill people, when we thought we had run out of ways to make Camp Crystal Lake any bit interesting, we took it to Manhattan.
Oh, yeah!
And I am, of course, talking about Friday the 13th, 8, which is Jason Goes to Manhattan. This film is so atrocious, it is wonderful. It has scenes involving junkies in the street being killed by him. We have people dying on boats beforehand with this very odd kind of transition between the two places that they go, between Camp Crystal Lake and Manhattan. It also has one of my favorite Jason moments involving a dude trying to box him to death and then getting his head punched off a roof. Oh my god, this film is incredible. And if you haven't seen it, it is quite possibly the reason that horrors should stop getting sequels.
Yes, I actually have to say that I think I don't know if I would put it on a guilty pleasure list because I don't know how many times I would watch it, but it is awful.
I've watched it so many times that I've lost track. It is just the film that I will not stop giggling at because it has everything that was 80s. It has bad 80s music. It has people in leather jackets.
Yes.
It has the quintessential black horror character that you just know now as a staple and we mock today, but that was where these things came from, was having him in movies like this. And
damn straight. It's a mighty fine choice for number one.
It's one of those movies that I am very proud to say that it is a guilty pleasure and that I own and that I will always own until the day that I die, because
which
I
is
will...
very much like my number one, because my number one is a film that I actually feel compelled to watch. It's not just even that I would watch it over and over again. It's on the Gloriously Wonderful Bad list. I cannot have a list like this without throwing it out there. It is not available on DVD in Australia.
We advise you to locate it.
But locate it. You can get it on Amazon and you can bring it in. This film I am compelled to watch at least once a year, sometimes more. It is, of course, Tobe Hooper's Life Force. This film is so staggeringly awful in almost every single way. And it is just amazing. You sit there watching it and I...
dialogue written by champs, too.
Oh, it's just... And this is the scary part. It's written by the guys who wrote Alien. And you sit there and go, what happened? You know? Yeah. Everything about it, though, all the way through it. Tobe Hooper, the man who made the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, it's got actors in it like Patrick Stewart, you know? And you sit there and go...
Oh, Ed, I think you said it best when you actually sold it to me when you told me to watch it. And I will say to everybody in the chat room, everyone that listens to our podcast, Dave sold this movie to me, then loaned it to me, and it has immediately gone to the top of my worst films of all time because you said it best when you said it had every chance to succeed.
Yes.
Every chance.
Every
chance. It is the only film in the world that was given every option to win. Like, it's just, you got good actors, you got good directors, you got a good...
John Dykstra doing special effects, he did Star Wars. No, it's like you have every element in here to make this film work.
And it still
just
failed.
Failed monumentally, and I think the best example I can give to you how amazing this film is, if you are still in doubt about watching this film, is my sister, the lovely Sarah, who's been on this show before. When I first got my copy from America, it was like this prized possession. I got it, and I said, sit down and watch Life Force with me. She goes, oh, I don't want to watch that, it looks terrible. But I said, no, just trust me, sit and watch it with me. She laid down on the couch, I was sitting in the chair. We started it. We watched it. Halfway through the film, she fell off the couch. She was laughing so hard. And to this day, she says it's the most amazing thing she's ever seen. It is so funny. And Josh, when I showed it to Josh, I remember there's a turning point in the film. You sit there. If on your first viewing, you'll sit there for the first half an hour going, eh. And there's a certain point in the film where it just clicks and you go, oh my God.
I bolted upright at that moment. I was like, what happened? And you feel like you've been hit by a bomb. It's just amazing.
And from there, it's a ride to the end. And it is my number one and will forever be the benchmark that all bad films are measured against. Mm. For me, there has never been another film like it, and I hope there never will be. In many ways, I hope there never will be, but I just love it, and I am waiting. I implore the producers or whoever holds the distribution rights for this film, because Canon went bust, but whoever holds the distribution rights, I implore you, we need a Criterion 2-disc special edition with bonus features and maybe even an extended director's cut. I will take anything you can throw at me for this film. I just love it. I would love it. I would love one of those retro documentaries where they talk about what happened. Anyway, we've got to wrap this up. We're running over, as always. The film show has a tendency of doing that because we love film so much.
Oh, yes.
If you agree or disagree with anything we have to say today, you can send feedback to feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a line at 02-8011-3167. Leave us a voicemail and we will even play it on the show. You can get, once again, we want to throw out a big push to Josh Spencer because he's coming up with new graphics for us, and those will be available on mugs and t-shirts and stuff like that at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. In the meantime, you can just get Geek Actually logos and stuff like that, but that's where you get all our swag. Facebook fan page, facebook.com/geekactually. And don't forget to check out our other shows, which are Tech Actually and the Geek Actually After Show, which is coming up very soon. Josh, you also happen to have a show that you want to talk about.
Well, of course, everybody that watches the show regularly will know we have a games site called rawdlc.com, and we also have a live show which we talk everything that is games and everything about games and the gaming industry. Feel free to come check us out. We do that on Wednesday at 8 p.m. We also have a massive shout out to people. We need help. We need your help. We need to upgrade in the machine we have so that we can get a system more like what Dave has here, so that we can actually have multiple cameras running and several other features that we need to be able to do. And to do that, we need to get a new computer. And as much as it is a great thing to do two shows, go to events, review games, and also work full-time, I need help to purchase a new computer so that we can actually get all this stuff to work. We have a donations thing on the front page. It's just on the left-hand side in the column. If you guys can donate even $10, $20, any of that, it's all helping, and it's all going to go towards getting a new machine to make the show run better.
Raggy wants to know if you want a Mac or a PC.
We will be getting a PC because the PC will be a lot cheaper, and we already have software and cameras that run on PCs. So,
see, our studio is very Mac-centric, but his is very PC-centric. So.
Yes. So yes, if you guys have $10 or $20 that you can sling to the site, please go over there and donate. Every dollar helps, and we really need it.
Raggy also wants to know if you want parts.
parts is how I am planning to build it, and I will be doing it all myself.
Very good. All right, so you can find out more about donations on that at rawdlc.com. All right, go there, and they've got links for all that. And, of course, if you feel like donating to our fine show, you can go to geekactually.com.
Sorry, yeah, that's kind of rude of me.
No, that's fine. We'd like to help everybody out, but we also have a donations button there. You can help us out. We're not actually storing up anything in particular at the moment, but, you know, bandwidth costs money, coffees cost money, movies cost money.
Oh, yes.
Everything costs money, so anything you can donate helps. But more importantly, we will keep going regardless. So more importantly than that, I would like to say if you are an iTunes user, we really need reviews. Hmm. So if you are an iTunes user and you subscribe through iTunes, can you just drop in and leave a rating or a review on any of these shows? In particular, though, Film Actually really needs some reviews because it's a new feed. As many reviews as possible will help us move up the ranks and get us more in line with everything. Now, got a giveaway, guys. Got a giveaway. Over the next 2 weeks, we're going to be giving these away. First, once again, we're going to do this really simply. I'm not going to do questions, and I'm not going to do anything like that. And our decision is final. Remember that. So it's the order that it comes in to our mailbox, not the order of which you sent it. It's the order I receive them. So the faster you act, the better you are. There is a movie opening in Australia on August 12th, 2010. We are seeing it next week, and we are going to review it on next week's show. So it's only 2 weeks away, so we've got to get this review up there. But the film is called Splice. It is a new sci-fi slash monster slash, I hesitate to use the word horror because I don't think there's any horror in it, but it's a sci-fi type species type thing, but apparently really good. We haven't seen it yet. It's been getting great reviews. It is directed by the guy who directed the film The Cube. So if you've ever seen The Cube, you might like it. I have in my hand 10 double passes. Now, we are giving 5 of these double passes away this week. Next week, we will give the other 5 away. All right? So all you have to do to get a double pass to go see Splice is to send us an email with your full name and mailing address. First 5 in the door, we will send passes to.
Yeah.
Okay? So there's no tricks here. There's no you have to answer questions or anything like that. Can't be bothered with any of that. All right? These are from our very good friends over at Nixco, at the distribution company.
Which a massive shout out to. They have been on fire lately, just giving us left, right, and center just exclusive things
absolutely.
To go
they're
see.
Doing really, really good by us. So, and they've also just sent us a new TV show that we're going to review in next week's show as well. So we've got to get that up as well. But yes, Splice. I'm really looking forward to this film. If you want to see it too, send us an email at feedback@geekactually.com. First 5 emails I receive this week. I'm not giving all 10 out this week. We're going to give out the other 5 next week. Yep. Okay. So the first 5 I receive emails at feedback@geekactually.com, you will receive in the mail. You'll receive 2 of these, which is a double pass, basically. They're admit ones. I think you can actually go on any night. I don't even think valid even with no free ticket sessions. Okay, so you don't have to worry about the no free list or anything. If you want to go see Splice, send us your email, full name, and postal address, and I will put these in the mail as soon as I get your email. First 5 out the door, and we'll notify you by email whether or not you are successful. Okay?
Awesome.
So, get your emails in. So I really want everybody to see this for our listeners, okay?
Cool.
All right, we just want a quick shout-out to some of our friends, and then we're going to get out of here. Real Junkies at WeekendRonan.com. Great podcast. These guys are really, they're pumping out podcasts at a rate of knots at the moment. They do film reviews from a real person point of view, and they drink a lot of tequila. They're a lot of fun. And Movie Fan Cast, our friends over there, Jesse and Charlie, and Brad, who's back on the network. He's on a different show, but he's got his own show called Right This Instant, I think it's called, which is now available on iTunes. You can subscribe to that as well. MovieFanHouse.com, you can check out their stuff. And, of course, go to Raw DLC to check out their stuff. I think that's it. I think we're done.
We're
done, over time. We got to get out of here. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week.